It's the Burt Cohen Show. Such an interesting dream it is, isn't it? Like in that Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. And the Jefferson Starship version there talked about girls and history. And, you know, there's been that phrase about the Republican war on women. We haven't heard much of it lately. Has it stopped? Did the party learn its lesson from their significant defeats last November? Or are they still going? Well, our guest today, I'm very pleased to have back, Amanda Marcotte. Amanda, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, she writes for and manages the blog Pandagon and blogs for Slate's XX and has two books out. It's A Jungle Out There, The Feminist Survival Guide to the Politically Inhospitable Environment, Get Opinionated, A Progressive's Guide to Finding Your Voice and Taking a Little Action. She's written about politics, pop culture, and feminism for outlets such as Slate, Salon, the LA Times, The Guardian, Bitch, which I haven't read, actually, and The American Prospect. A former resident of Texas, she now lives in Brooklyn, New York. Must be a lot nicer, I suspect. Well, again, thanks for being with us, Amanda Marcotte. And I got to start off with a quote about the war on women from the Republican point of view. And this is Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State. She's the top-ranking woman in that state's legislature. She was quoted recently as saying that Democrats are fabricating the war on women to distract from the real issues. Well, that's an interesting take. Amanda, when did the term war on women first come into use? What did and does it mean? And is it an exaggeration?
I guess it's always kind of been around, but it really became popular in the years 2011 and 2012, mainly because attacks on women's rights from the right escalated. I do enjoy hearing Republicans say that Democrats made the war on women up. It's like, how are they making it up? I mean, they have the evidence on hand, an escalation in bills trying to ban and restrict abortion, multiple attempts from Republicans to defund contraception subsidies. The Republicans tried to kill the Violence Against Women Act. They failed to do that. And, you know, it's just getting worse. We're seeing more rape philosophers, Republicans making gross statements about rape victims. We're seeing more attacks on abortion rights, and we're seeing attacks on contraception, which were unthinkable just even a few years ago, becoming mainstream now.
And what I seem to remember, the subject of the war on women came up quite a bit during the presidential campaign. And I don't know, it kind of seemed like all the Republican candidates for president were sort of trying to outdo each other on the war on women. What, maybe you can recall, I don't recall exactly some of the things they said and some of the things they stood for. And of course, they paid a price.
Yeah, I mean, so for instance, you had things like Mitt Romney saying that he was going to defund Planned Parenthood, that they just had to go. And that was, you know, Romney was considered the most moderate, most least conservative of the candidates that were out there. So that's the sort of level of attacks on women that we're talking about, where, you know, it would have been unthinkable even for a conservative politician just a few years ago to say that we need to end contraception subsidies in the United States. You know, George Bush certainly pushed an anti-contraception agenda when he was president, but he did so very quietly. And he never even had the cojones, as it was, to like attack funding within the U.S. borders for contraception. And then here, it went from being unspeakable within Republican ranks to being the thing that the presidential candidate, who was considered too moderate by most of the party, saying, you know, to reporters.
Yeah, it is amazing that he was considered the moderate one. Who would have ever thought that? Now, it just seems to me, you know, the Republican Party paid a very, very heavy price for this widespread perception. After they were so evidently hurt by the accusation, what have they done to challenge that perception? Are they just hoping we'll forget, or what?
The only thing they do to challenge that perception is squeal like pigs anytime somebody ever points out that they're still fighting the war on women. That's literally it. They haven't done anything like, you know, reduce the war on women, scale back the war on women, much less quit the war on women. On the contrary, we have seen an escalation since the election in attacks on women's rights. We not only have the House, Representative Trent Franks in the House, grandstanding over a 20-week abortion ban that has no chance whatsoever of passing through the Senate and the President. We have escalation of attacks on women's rights on the state level. We have attempts to shut down abortion clinics, you know, by the hundreds in this country. It's completely out of control. And if they don't like saying that if they don't like people saying they're waging a war on women, you know, it really, they show no evidence of that by escalating it.
Well, but there hasn't been as much focus on it in recent months. And your article is actually, it's titled Conservatives Double Down on the War on Women. The point being that it's kind of it's not something that people talk about right now. We seem to our attention span seems to be embarrassingly brief, I must say, and the focus hasn't been there. What about the charge that the Democrats are just making up this war on women to distract from the real issues? There's a lot of real other issues going along. What's your reaction to that, Amanda?
You know, the Democrats would love nothing more, I think, if Republicans quit trying, spending all this time passing one bill after another, trying to restrict abortion and contraception access, instead of doing things like work on jobs bills or clean energy bills or any of the real issues. I mean, the only people here that are distracting from the real issues by grandstanding on reproductive rights are conservatives, Republicans. That's it. They're, you know, it basically, when Republicans say that Democrats are just saying this as a distraction, that's pure projection. You know, it's not Democrats who brought up, it's not Democrats who are making abortion a central issue in Congress right now. It's not Democrats that are passing an abortion bill in Congress right now while we have 8% unemployment in this country, while we still have a war going on, while we have all this controversy over the NSA, all these other real problems that people are concerned about. It's not the Democrats that are using congressional resources to pass abortion bills, go nowhere abortion bills. That is the Republicans right there.
You're right. It clearly is. And the facts are there. The Democrats are not bringing up these reproductive rights issues. And I want to look at the Republican Party. The term conservative, to me, is used way too often. But I suppose, you know, people know what that means. I mean, I don't know what they're conserving. They strike me as kind of right wing, really. But looking at the, you know, tradition of the Republican Party since, say, World War II, has it long been a tradition of the Republican Party to oppose reproductive rights, or is it a fairly recent divergence from the traditional moderate Republican Party?
You know, the Republican Party, at least up through the 70s, was as pro-choice, if not more pro-choice, than the Democrats. It was not a partisan issue.
Yeah.
There were people on both sides of the aisle that were pro-choice. There were people on both sides of the aisle that were anti-choice. It became a partisan issue because in the 70s and 80s, the Republicans realized that the religious right was this massive base of people that will, once they've decided they're on your team, they will do anything for you. And they wanted to tap that energy. So they started to grandstand on abortion rights and really make reproductive rights in general, you know, their enemy. And with that, they basically got the religious right to back them forever and ever and ever. You know, it was a boldly political move, and we're just living with the consequences of that now. And at this point, I don't think that it's really that the Republicans that are in office right now are simply pandering to the religious right. However, I think, you know, after a couple generations of the religious right being pandered to in this way, they've all become the politicians themselves. So one of the problems we're up against is, even as it's becoming politically untenable to be so anti-women's rights, even if it loses you elections, the people who are running for office as Republicans now are almost always right-wing Christians, and they're going to care about this issue whether it suits them politically or not.
Well, that's quite interesting and you know, curious, because I always thought it was about winning. You know, it was about getting elected and having your agenda make it into reality. But if they don't care that it's not a winning issue, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Can you figure that out?
Well, you know, politics is a weird creature that way. I would definitely say that there are plenty of politicians who put their issues before they put their electability. The thing is, they just tend to get weeded out by the system. There's a, and I know they would definitely hate it if I to hear this phrasing, but there's a kind of natural selection process going on in politics where people who can't win get rooted out. Unfortunately, and that should happen more in this country, but unfortunately, through gerrymandering and other kind of devious tactics that have been going on for decades, Republicans have made a lot of seats that they shouldn't be able to hold unassailable.
And I think it's...
And so they have a lot more power politically than they really deserve by the voters.
Well, it's also true, having been a politician myself and been elected a number of times, that's oftentimes people... like somebody standing up for what he or she believes in and, you know, not doing what's popular. Most of the time, it doesn't work. But sometimes if you show some chutzpah or cojones, whatever, that sometimes people like that and they like your honesty. They may disagree with you, but they like your honesty and standing up against that. It's not politically advantageous generally, but it seems that they really believe it. You're listening to The Burt Cohen Show. Our guest today is Amanda Marcotte, who writes for Slate, Salon, LA Times, The Wonderful Guardian. And we're talking about the resurgence of the Republicans' war on women, despite how it's losing them votes. And, you know, it does seem that the effort on immigration. Now, immigration was a big issue in the 2012 election. The Republicans were falling all over themselves, basically opposing easing restrictions on immigration and, you know, making it at any bit easier for the 11 million undocumented workers who are here in America now. They lost a lot of ground because of that. And they get it. And they're making changes on that because they recognize and they've said openly, look, we're going to keep losing because there's more and more, you know, immigrants coming in and fewer white people. We got to make some changes. So if they're getting it on that, what's the deal with this? I mean, why don't they get it?
Well, part of it is that I think, you know, kind of racially loaded issues like immigration tend to have much more predictable pattern voting patterns when it comes to who's going to sort of support you or who's going to reject you. So I think Republicans definitely overrate how conservative Hispanic Americans are. Like, I think that even if they do change their tune on immigration, it's not going to get them a lot of votes from Hispanic Americans, who just tend to be more liberal than white Americans generally. But at least it will detoxify, I think, some of the atmosphere. Like, their hope is, and I think it's not unreasonable, that there are Hispanic American voters out there who are ready to vote Republican, and if they just switch on the immigration issue, they'll move over. But when it comes to women's rights, it's not particularly predictable who's going to be for women's rights and who's not, based on their own gender, right? So men are more Republican than women.
Yes.
But when you actually get into the weeds of the statistics, it's very rarely on the choice issue. It's very rarely about reproductive rights. It's not really about that. It tends to be more about the social safety net. Now, having said all of that, I want to be clear that I think Republicans are definitely screwing themselves when it comes to women. And that's because they made the mistake of tying social safety net issues to the reproductive rights issue. It's one thing to be against a legal abortion or to try to ban abortion rights. I think that that has not done them excessive damage in the past. But now they are making attacks on contraception subsidies, on health care that helps women choose if they get pregnant in the first place. And that stuff gets coded just as much as a social safety net issue as it is a reproductive rights issue. So you kind of wed the two together, and women are going to be paying attention. And women do not like it.
No. And women are even more than the 47% of the voting populace. And we know what happened when they alienated them. And I'm trying to figure out the other side. Some of them say that, well, by the Democrats focusing so much on reproductive rights issues, that Democrats are saying, oh, that's all women care about. That it's Democrats that are insulting women. Democrats are reducing women to that one issue, and that is insulting women. What's your reaction to that defense?
Oh, it's nonsense to say that Democrats are reducing women to that one issue. I mean, there's just no evidence of that at all. That's like saying, because we have a campaign platform that emphasizes pulling out of the war and ending the wars in the Middle East, that we are reducing the soldier vote to that one issue or something like that. That doesn't make any sense at all. Highlighting an issue that's important to people doesn't mean that you think no other issues are important to them. That the Republicans pulled that card shows that they're desperate and they've run out of options.
It is pretty amazing that they keep on doing it. And we mentioned the what's the name of the rep that's putting in the bill right now? Representative Trent Franks to ban all abortions after 20 weeks. And they try to mitigate that a little bit and say, well, in case of rape or incest. Oh, but then again, many Republicans think that, well, women just have this natural defense against rape. They're less likely to get pregnant from rape, which is pretty amazing. I couldn't make this stuff up. So what is at work? There's the fight against reproductive rights certainly goes on at the federal level and at the state level. And I find it fascinating that according to my research in 2011, there were nearly 1,000 bills in state legislatures to restrict a woman's right to legal abortion services. And that's up quite a bit from the previous year. What is the trend in state legislatures? Because the Supreme Court in one of their decisions with regard to reproductive rights did kind of toss the ball back into the states. So what do you hear at the state level? I guess there's a lot happening in places like Ohio and Texas. Perhaps you could talk in some generalities and some specifics about that, Amanda.
There's all this focus on the 20-week ban, and it won't pass. And, you know, I think that we need to focus more on the states because that's where abortion providers are really getting hammered. It's only June, and I think last I checked, there's more than 300 bills in various state legislatures restricting abortion and contraception access. To make it worse, the ones that are out there are worse than the ones that were out in 2011. A lot of these bills are omnibus bills. They're huge, massive bills that have so many restrictions in them. Not only that, they are restrictions that are really well designed to shut down a maximum number of clinics. So, for instance, Texas, which, of course, is one of the largest states in the nation, just population-wise, also geography-wise, it's the basically largest, except Alaska, has an omnibus bill that Rick Perry called a special session to pass. And the reason he did this is it's easier to pass a bill during the special session than during the regular legislative session. That's how seriously he takes this. This bill will shut down all but five abortion clinics in the country if it becomes law, or in the state if it becomes law. And, I mean, just think about how many women live in Texas and how spread out Texas is to really get an idea of how much damage this will do to women's ability to get safe, legal abortion in Texas. And then I would add to you that Texas already is where a lot of black market abortion drugs are kind of coming into the country. So they set up a perfect storm to create a real medical crisis in their state.
Wow. So illegal drugs, abortion drugs? I'm not even familiar.
Yes. There's a drug you can buy over the counter in a lot of Latin American countries in Mexico called Cytotec. It's an ulcer medication. Or you can buy it with just a very quick, like, black market kind of prescription. And it is traded widely around the world because it does cause a miscarriage if you take it, because you take it early. And you know, it's pretty safe. It's not as safe as RU-46 is, but the problem is when you buy black market abortion drugs off some shady website, you don't necessarily know what's actually in that pill.
Yeah.
And more and more women are turning to that because they can't get to an abortion clinic.
Well, it's interesting. Certainly the economic separation, you know, the distinction between the rights of people with money who could always get reproductive care, you know, even before Roe versus Wade, and those rights of access that are available to poor women and women of color, you know, restricting that access. Those women and their families are, you know, affected very much economically. Now, I suppose I can just imagine people on the right saying, you're talking about economics, we're talking about killing babies. But could this be intentional? What do the powers within the Republican Party have to gain by making life so much worse? You know, if women don't want to have these children, they already have one or two or who knows how many children, and want to say, you know, we really can't afford this, and let's stop and, you know, take care of and love the children that we have. Is it their intention? I mean, what do they have to gain by forcing more of these poor women and women of color into ever more desperate poverty? Why do they do that?
Well, it's pretty easy to see how that works out for them. I mean, if poor women are, because they have unwanted childbearing, made more poor, if their lives are very difficult and they have to spend all their time just working their fingers to the bone just to survive, and even then not doing particularly well at it. These are women that are not getting educations. These are women that are not climbing out of poverty. And these are women who are having children who can't do the same. People that live in survival mode don't have time or energy to politically organize. They don't have time and energy quite a bit of the time to do better for their community. They are not going to be in a very good position to give time to political campaigns, to give money to organizing. They're not going to be able to unionize as easily. Uh-huh. All sorts of things come to mind. And, you know, that is, it's a kind of weird voter suppression ultimately that is much more serious than voter ID, because you're talking about taking the very people that could throw your ass out of office, really, and making it impossible for them to do much more than try to get food on the table every day for their families.
I see. So it's an intentional effort to disempower people you don't want to vote for you. So a very clever, I had not figured that out, very clever strategy of voter ID, of repressing voters, keeping the voters you don't want to vote from voting. Fascinating. Boy, that is amazing. I got to read you a quote. You know, it's a lot of graduations are happening in June. And on June 2nd, there was a social studies teacher in Greentown, Indiana, a fellow by the name of Peter Heck, who said these words at his commencement speech. He said, "If you choose to have a career, God's blessing on you. But I challenge you to recognize what the world scoffs at, that your greatest role in your life will be that of wife and mother, that the greatest impact you will ever contribute to the world is a loving and devoted investment into the lives of your precious children. To solve the problems plaguing our society, we don't need more women as CEOs. We need more women as invested mothers." Are women turning their backs on motherhood? And I actually sense a little bit of, dare I say, racism in this, because there's a perception on the right that the birth rate among white mothers is lower because white women are too busy getting educated and advancing careers to bother with babies. Can you respond to this? What are they doing? And can it be said that is there some degree of concern that white women just aren't into mothering, that they're focusing too much on getting educated and advancing their careers?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have it exactly. I mean, if you take his speech and you really break it down to what he was saying at its core, he was looking at women of privilege, women who get to be college educated, women who are from wealthy backgrounds. He's looking at them and he's straight up telling them, you are wasted as leaders and politicians and CEOs and all these other things that the men of your class are going on to do. You need to get married to those men, have children, and dedicate your life to being a housewife. That's all he was saying. There is no way around that. You know, there's no real evidence that elite women are bad mothers because they work. In fact, the opposite. We have a lot of evidence that shows that elite women in our culture are doing quite well, thank you very much, both as mothers and in their marriages and in their life. And a part of it is because they work. So college-educated, well-off women get married and stay married more than any other group of women in this country. They have children, and their children do better than the children of any other group of women in this country. All of this is just a benefit of their privilege. And part of it is that because they go to work, they bring in even more money to their household, which confers more benefits on their children, which helps their kids get into better schools, get better educations, have all the perks and privileges. I mean, the only real reason that a man makes that kind of statement to elite women is because he's just all hurt that he doesn't get to live the father knows best fantasy that he thinks he's entitled to. That's the end of that story. And unfortunately, the problem with that kind of rhetoric is it's just mostly trolling at this point. But it does sort of lay the groundwork for attacks on reproductive rights that disproportionately hurt poor, less privileged women.
Yeah, and I have to say that quote reminds me of something I'm reading about alcohol prohibition now, and I was rather taken aback when a member of Congress said that he was against educating blacks because that makes them terrible field hands. And
yeah,
I have to. it's really it does sound somewhat similar. And you know, looking at history, as I always try to do, the cultural and political values of the Old South, you know, having to do with racism and male domination. You know, those cultural and political values are favoring white Protestant male domination and control in all facets of life. And I wonder, is what we're seeing in this continued war on women, despite all the torpedoes, full speed ahead, is this 19th century attitude from the Confederacy in control of the 21st century Republican Party?
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way to look at this. I mean, what we're looking at is that, and I think that's the reason they're escalating right now. We are culturally on a cusp, and nobody believes this more than Republicans, that we are at a break point in our country's sort of forward momentum, where if they don't re-grab all the power that they've lost now, if they don't make one last final dash of reasserting white male supremacy over all other people, it will be lost to them forever.
Wow, no wonder they're scared.
I think that's what they think. I think that there's a reason for them to think that. I think that what we're seeing right now is the flailing about of people, of a group of people who feel like this is their last chance.
Wow. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Bert Cohen Show. Our guest today is Amanda Marcot, author of It's a Jungle Out There, The Feminist Survival Guide to Politically Inhospitable Environments, Get Opinionated, A Progressive's Guide to Finding Your Voice and Taking a Little Action. And we're talking about the renewed Republican war on women. You know, it seems to me that if the Republican Party is widely seen, widely perceived to be dug in and committed to maintaining white Protestant male domination and control, isn't that a sure losing bet? Aren't they guaranteed to lose that way? Why aren't they getting the message? It's just they truly, truly believe that, and they're determined to, you know, take the ship down with them. Why aren't they getting it?
Well, I mean, I guess in their mind, that what do they have to lose? Like, if they don't fight, they lose, right? If they do fight, they probably lose, but they at least have a chance of winning. I mean, it's not, they've already done a remarkable job of establishing, let me put it this way. Republicans control the House of Representatives right now.
Oh, yeah.
And they can pass any bill that they want. Like, that shouldn't be true. Like, if you look at the representation in Congress versus what the actual people of America look like, you know, that the Republican Party shouldn't have a control of the House of Congress. They should be this marginalized regional party that has basically almost no power at all. And instead, because of electoral funkiness, gerrymandering, you know, the fact that rural votes count so much more than urban votes in our system, they have a huge amount of power. So if they're making a power play and they're saying we're just going to consolidate the power we have now and just sort of block the majority from ever gaining power, you know, they do have historical evidence that they can do this.
Well, that's true. And I'm reminded once again of the old Confederacy, because part of their whole thing was to have rural voters have much more power than urban voters. And it seems in a way they won that battle. You know, the war on minority voters through voter ID backfired big time in 2012. Voter ID was, people got what it was. It was voter suppression. It was clearly intended as voter suppression. And what happened? A lot more people from minorities came out to vote, and it backfired hugely. Couldn't this happen with women now, or do they think that women aren't paying enough attention to this? Are they aware that this could be a danger, that by keeping up this war on women, they could backfire once again? I mean, surely it's pretty evident that that's a real possibility.
Yeah, I mean, they are aware of it, and they're worried about it, and as well they should be. I would just say, however, that the Republicans have put themselves into a bad situation, a really, really bad situation. You know, by spending decades establishing their power base in the evangelical Christian right, they made it so that they can never leave those voters behind. They can't win without them. They're like half of their loyal voters. If they start abandoning evangelical votes in order to chase after liberal, like more liberally minded women, more socially liberal women, I mean, that's just a very bad, bad call. First of all, there's really no evidence that they can really turn those votes around. You know, are they ever going to start getting pro-choice votes if they became a little less hostile to reproductive rights? Not really. Not very many. But they can, if they don't attack reproductive rights with a full throttle, they can lose the evangelical vote. And that's what I think they're truly terrified of, because those are their last loyal voters. They can't afford to give them up right now. And the thing with evangelical voters is they will stay home. They really will. They are notorious for it. If they don't think you're Christian enough or right-wing enough or Republican enough or anything enough, they will just rather stay home than vote at all. And Republicans know this, so they're kind of in a very bad situation. They can't stop attacking women without giving up those votes. And if they don't stop attacking women, they're just going to get even marginalized as a party.
And I suppose there are those certain bases. I think of, for example, the gun lobby, that, you know, the vast majority of Americans would like to see, you know, safer neighborhoods and keeping our families safer. But the passion, the single issue focus of the gun lobby is the intensity gap. You know, they tend to focus on one thing. And if I imagine with the gun people, if a politician isn't, no bans on anything, no control on machine guns or anything enough, then those voters, like the evangelicals, will stay home. And the Republicans must be aware of that. And I want to look at some of the responses from the other side. For example, there's a woman named Erica Harold, who won the Miss America contest in 2003 before graduating from Harvard Law School. She says there is no war on women, that the principle, in her words, principles of economic freedom and limited government are not part of the war on women, but actually empower women. What do you say to that?
Well, women voters disagree. They disagree with that more vehemently than they do attacks on reproductive rights, honestly. Female voters believe that a strong state, like poll after poll shows this, female voters more than male voters believe that a strong social safety net empowers women, that being able to get health care if you need it, being able to have health insurance, even if it's hard for you to afford, empowers women. Not being having access to affordable education is what empowers women. That if you're hard on your luck, if you fall into bad times, being able to get food stamps so that you can keep your children fed is what actually empowers women. You know, not being afraid that if you leave an abusive husband, you're going to live in this impoverished, starving existence or even homelessness is what empowers women. That's what women voters believe. There's almost no doubt about that. Women voters are far, far more likely to tell pollsters than male voters that the government should guarantee its citizens food, shelter, and health care and education.
Yeah, it does seem
so. No.
Well, and of course, some Republican women are fighting back. There's a book called Liberty is No War on Women by Carrie Lucas and Sabrina Schaefer. They claim that the liberals' recipe for an even bigger government backfires on women by eroding opportunity and true financial security. They explain how returning power to the people, they say in their way, is the real key to women's freedom. Lucas and Schaefer conclude that the war on women rhetoric is fundamentally insulting to independent women and should be soundly rejected by all Americans. I wonder how that book is selling.
That kind of rhetoric just falls on deaf ears with your average female voter, and I'll tell you why. Just in a practical standpoint, knowing that you can still have health insurance if you change your job makes female voters feel more free, not less free. Mm. Knowing that, you know, you can, again, leave an abusive husband or choose when you have children or when you get married feels more free, not less free. You know, being able to feel like you can get educated wherever you, in whatever college that you can, you know, get into is the sort of thing that actual female voters define as freedom. I'm not really even sure what kind of freedom of opportunity Republicans are even talking about. They throw a lot of empty language around, but never actually talk about what makes people feel free. And what makes people feel free is choices. It's security. It's feeling like if you make a choice, if you experiment, if you look around for what kind of choices you need to make in your life, you're going to starve, be homeless because of it. I think that's what makes people feel free. People don't feel very free if they feel like I have to take this job at McDonald's or I'll die.
Right. Yeah, that's not exactly what I would consider freedom. There has to be some economic freedom in order to have real freedom. Doesn't the Republican Party promote strong women? There are many Republican women who are in the House of Representatives and in the U.S. Senate. Don't they actively promote strong women? And how is that sexist then?
The Republicans actively promote strong women?
Yes, that's what they say.
Well, yeah, I think that's a misunderstanding of what feminism is really about. I mean, that's great for those women. Feminism is about equality and opportunities for all women. This sort of vague notion of a strong woman and that being some sort of vague social support for strong women, whatever that means. I really have never understood, like, what makes a woman strong versus unstrong. You know, is she loud? Is she tall? You know, it seems like such a vague term anyway. That's really not what feminism is about. That's really not what motivates female voters. What really motivates voters and what feminism particularly about is ensuring the security and opportunity for all people, regardless of some nebulous notion of their strength.
But some Republicans would say that Democrats are all for keeping people dependent on government, and that what the Republicans are talking about is freeing up the economy, letting the private sector create tons of jobs and getting government out of the way. Is it, keeping a social safety net would seem to kind of go along and ratify their belief that, Democrats want to keep people dependent on social services.
No, I mean, nobody wants to be dependent on social services. Again, polling shows over and over again, people see social services as a fallback position.
Yeah.
And it is not, it is the notion that it's good to create private sector jobs is not actually in contrast to the notion that we need a strong social safety net. Like, you can have both. I mean, for certain, you can have both. I mean, a lot of European countries have both a strong social safety net and, you know, private job protection.
Hey,
I mean, there's nothing that's stopping people from investing money, creating businesses, and hiring people just because food stamps exist or Medicaid exists. There's nothing about, like, nobody out there who's like, I'm sitting on $1 million. I'd like to start a business. Oh, too bad food stamps exist. That's going to stop me from doing that. That doesn't happen. I mean,
instead of a good job, I could have had food stamps. Right.
Yeah, I mean, what the implication is of taking away the social safety net is really just forcing people to accept sub living wage jobs because it's that or starve. And that is not how to run a society. That's not even economically good, because we know that working class people, when they make more money, they spend more money, which helps the economy. This is very 101.
Yeah, yeah. Well, facts are such stubborn things. And I wonder about how significant a bloc within the Republican Party are anti-feminist women. You know, we know that within the Republican Party, there's a significant bloc of evangelicals, and there's, you know, the gun lobby as well. I wonder, Amanda Marco, what you know about how significant a bloc within the Republican Party are these anti-feminist women. And we know there are a fair amount of anti-feminist women who mistrust it and don't like the term feminism.
You know, it's a pretty significant block of their female voters. I'd say it's pretty much ubiquitous when it comes to their female politicians. And, you know, it demonstrates the complexities of sort of the issues of gender here. It's not like race, where the getting the sort of anti-racist black or Hispanic people in the Republican leadership is a struggle for each face that they can get. Like, there are a lot of women out there who find it personally beneficial to reject feminism. And, yeah, you know, it's obvious the reason why. I mean, you look at someone like a Sarah Palin out there, and it's like, by rejecting women's rights, she has made so much money, amassed so much fame, gotten so much power. It's just a lucrative thing to do. It's not surprising that a lot of women take that option. The mere fact that you're a woman doesn't mean anything about the validity of feminist claims if you're against them. It just sort of means that you found it personally beneficial to oppose feminism.
Well, I got a quote here you don't really have to comment on, but I just thought I couldn't leave this one out. Fox News host, and you know something weird's going to come after I say that, Fox News host Andrea Tantoros explained feminism. She said, a lot of them are older, they're not married, and they're not getting you know what. That's how they dismiss it. And, you know,
go ahead.
Well, switching subjects a little bit to something more realistic, they say that the right claims that, you know, it is about money, that doctors encourage abortions because they make a lot of money from this procedure. What's your reaction to that?
You know, I dare them to find any other medical procedure that is performed by a higher percentage of its being performed by nonprofits than abortion. I mean, they often go off on how, like, something like a third of abortions in this country are performed at a Planned Parenthood, a nonprofit. By definition, it cannot be profitable to have to provide abortion at Planned Parenthood. They want to have it both ways, and they attack Planned Parenthood constantly on one hand, and then on the other hand, run around saying abortion is an industry that is only set up for profit. Right. You can't have it both ways. Either it's a massive nonprofit that is providing quite a bit of abortion, or it's a profit-driven industry. It can't be both. And it's, you know, and that's also very ridiculous, because, you know, it's ridiculous on just so many levels. It's such an obvious, like, they know that they're lying when they say something like that. I mean, do doctors charge for abortion? Yes. Do some of them make a really nice living? Yes. Isn't that true of doctors generally?
Yes.
I mean, certainly OBGYNs charge quite a bit for childbirth, quite a bit more for childbirth. And that's, you know, if you really want to get into the money-making business, being an obstetrician is really where it's at. In fact, so much so that quite a few abortion providers are also obstetricians.
In their defense, I have to say that they have to pay dearly for insurance as well. It's a lot of money for them. And if you just tune in again, Bert Cohen here. Our guest is Amanda Marcotte. We're talking about the renewed doubling down of the right-wing war on women. And there are certain money powers within the Republican Party. I think of the Koch brothers, obviously, and there's a lot of money from the gun manufacturers as well. I wonder if there is significant money, what you know about this, from the, you know, anti-feminist right wing. Is there significant money, and that's part of a factor why they choose not to get, that this is not a winning strategy? Do we know about money on this particular issue?
Oh, yeah. There's so much money flowing into the anti-choice movement. It's unbelievable. One of the things that they have on their side is that they have there's all through this country, there's lots of 2-bit, 4-bit, super wealthy, millionaire, billionaire right-wingers who take this issue very seriously. So they spend lots and lots of money on it. You know, CEOs of corporations like Domino's, I know that the Promised Land milk guy, dairy guy, all sorts of curves that that company is owned by a rabid anti-choice. So these men just spend huge amounts of money on anti-abortion causes, and they donate just tons and tons of money. And unlike the pro, and it is true that the pro-choice side has a similar kind of donation structure, lots and lots of wealthy supporters.
Oh, yeah.
But the difference between the two is that the pro-choice side also has to provide service, which is expensive. You know, the pro-choice side provides contraception, abortion, cancer screening, clinics, places where people can actually get medical care. That is all very, very expensive. We also have all these legal fees because the anti-choice side basically spends the taxpayer money passing a bunch of anti-abortion laws, and then private donations are the people that fund the pro-choice side, the people who sue to get these laws revoked. So it's way more expensive to be a pro-choicer than an anti-choicer. But both sides have huge amounts of donations. So for the right, for the anti-choice side, it's kind of all gravy.
And I'll never forget a quote from Barney Frank, who said that the pro-life movement is pro-life from conception to birth. And, you know, it's expensive, you know, and this is one area where the right wing is trying to cut. They don't want to cut military waste, not at all, but they want to cut off food stamps, legal assistance, preschool. You know, there'd be no hope for college funds later on. So, you know, to call them pro-life, you know, I just it seems a little bit disingenuous, I have to say, because, you know, there is life after birth, I would think. So, you know, we're starting to gear up toward election season, although here where the show is coming from, New Hampshire, election season never stops, ever, ever, ever. But, you know, I think we haven't heard a lot about the war on women lately, and that's why we're talking about it. And is that what they're counting on, that we're paying attention to these other issues like the so-called scandals around the White House, and that, oh, we'll just forget? You know, especially by the time November 2014 rolls around. Is this a conscious effort on their part? I can't help but think that it is.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a very difficult situation where they want to advocate for their preferred anti-abortion, anti-contraception policies, which of course means going and getting media attention, but they also don't want too much media attention.
Uh-huh.
Because then they do lose votes, and not just from women, but from men too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Men are just as pro-choice as women.
Absolutely.
They play a very weird game there.
It seems like on one hand they got to satisfy the funders, the anti-choice funders, but not do it so publicly. You know, it's a very, very difficult tightrope to walk. But the war on women is maybe lower in the public attention right now, but it's not going away. They're still at it. It's people need to keep attention to the federal legislation and especially to state legislation. I don't know if there are any websites that you can point people to keep on top of this stuff, and also if people want to keep on track of what you're writing, Amanda Marcotte. Suggestions?
For helping people keep on top of it?
Yeah, for keeping on top of what's happening with reproductive rights in terms of statewide and federal. And also, I'm sure you can point people to how they can keep track of your efforts, Amanda.
I think, you can always follow me on Twitter. Amanda Marcotte is my Twitter following. I write for and podcast for RH Reality Check for people who like podcasts in the audience. They are probably the best source out there for right. keeping up with news on reproductive rights. I have the weekly podcast there, but they also have an entire slate of reporters, a Washington correspondent, a legal analyst, all sorts of people that they just follow all these intricate, over-the-top, state-by-state, overwhelming attacks on reproductive rights. So I recommend that website.
And that's called RH Reality Check, is that right?
Yes,
.org. RHRealityCheck.org. Thank you very much for keeping us on top of this, the wonderful world of the right-wing war on women, Amanda Marcotte. But I have a feeling women are going to keep on pressing ahead for freedom. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Freedom. Keep on pushing straight ahead.
With my life, so I bought my lid. Even messing with my children, and you're screaming at my wife, and get off of my bed if you wanna get out of here alive.
Freedom,
freedom, that's what I want now. Don't ma'am, well, I don't need it now. I'm just trying to slap it out of her hand.
Freedom,
so I can live.
Freedom,
so I can give.
Freedom.